Hi, and welcome to Shadow Talk's weekly intelligence summary track, where our team of analysts dive into the top threat intelligence stories each week. To read their full findings and analysis, make sure to visit resources.digitalshadows.com. Now here's your host, Harrison Van Riper.
What's up, listeners? Shadow Talk is back with another episode of the weekly intelligence summary. I'm your host, HVR, and joining me this week is Jamie Collier, the Collier Jam on Twitter. Jamie, how are you?
Very good, thanks. Good to be here. Always happy to be on Shadow Talk.
As always. And then we also have Alex Giriku, or Ali G, as some may call him. How are you?
Good. I'm doing pretty well. It's nice to be back on here.
Yeah, so I don't know if I like the Ali G nickname. Like,
why?
I just feel like we have JC Cool, Collier Jam, and then Ali G. Like, I think we can do better. We can do something cooler. We'll think on it, though.
G-Man.
The G-Man. No.
I guess this is a question of if nicknames kind of come organically or if we should kind of really force it. You know, maybe Alex would really force it, because that's always the kind of recipe for a winning nickname, when you really try and push it through.
Exactly. When you just hammer it home. That's really what we should do for everything that we do. Okay, cool. Well, as we think about the nickname for this week, let's get into it. So we've got some Russian satellite spoofing. Is that right, Jamie? I'm honestly not even going to really pretend to know what this one's about, because it was a little bit over my head. So hopefully you can explain it to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this story is really actually kind of went under the radar. But I think it's, you know, quite interesting and quite a lot of takeaways for the cyber threat landscape. So certainly something worth paying attention to. But as you mentioned, Harrison, Russia's kind of been conducting this spoofing against the Global Navigation Satellite System, also referred to as GNSS. This has been ongoing since 2016 and identified and attributed to the Russian state. So the campaign involved exploiting various global satellite networks. That includes networks such as the US Global Positioning System, or GPS, also Europe's Galileo, also Chinese and Russian satellite networks, but I won't attempt to pronounce them, because I'll just end up embarrassing myself. But the campaign involves sending these false positional coordinates and signals to ships and plane navigation systems, or it tried to jam the navigation systems entirely. So since 2016, according to the report, 9,883 incidents were reported. And this was across 10 locations across Crimea, Syria, and Russia. The geographical placement of the spoofing incidents closely followed the overseas and domestic visits of prominent Russian government officials. And it also conducted near Russian military bases or kind of, you know, significant government buildings. So while, you know, this was probably most likely to try and obstruct foreign military, you know, and maybe kind of drone surveillance, aircraft surveillance, ship surveillance, etc., it's also had a spillover effect to civilian organizations, which I think is, you know, potentially quite significant. So out of those kind of 9,000 plus incidents that were recorded, at least 1,300 of those incidents affected civilian ships. There was also a discussion of how this could potentially affect civilian aircraft flying above these locations where the spoofing was taking place. And I think the final thing to mention here is that the use of GNSS spoofing technology to protect government officials that are on the move also implies that Russian forces have developed mobile jamming units.
Interesting. So do you think that this mainly affected the transport sector?
Yeah, the main impact is clearly for ships and aircraft operating in and around the geographies where this took place. But I think what's important to remember with transport is the indirect impacts that can have. So for any sector or organization that's reliant on freight or shipping, organizations operating just-in-time supply chains, for example, any impact on shipping lanes can then have a follow-on impact that could be quite severe. But apart from those indirect risks, GNSS systems are used for all sorts of things. They're used for television broadcasting systems, smart home technology. You know, you've got the kind of police, ambulance, fire brigade using them. The finance sector even uses it. So this is technology that really underpins a variety of societal functions.
Yeah. Aside from the kind of military aspect of this, how accessible is this kind of technology, or similar to kind of the general public? And do you think that we'll see more of this as this becomes more accessible?
Yeah, so I think that leads us nicely into the kind of the future threat landscape. One of the pieces the report was really talking about is how the technology that's required to actually spoof signals is becoming increasingly affordable. You know, now discussion of these devices being able to be produced for under $300. So I think what that will mean is that threat actors will, you know, A, it will become more affordable. B, they are going to be seeing that these campaigns are being used, that, you know, just the kind of awareness piece in terms of how they work. So I think that will lead to kind of other threat actors conducting GNSS attacks, potentially more kind of cyber criminal application. This could, you know, be related to things like autonomous vehicles, you know, potentially causing reputational damage, but potentially also areas like piracy and ship theft. You know, a lot of application there in terms of the maritime sector. There's also potential application in terms of extortion. You know, attacks could be perpetrated with GNSS spoofing, with attackers holding commercial or passenger vehicle navigation systems as hostages.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, listeners, remember to download the full intelligence summary at resources.digitalshadows.com, and you can get the full rundown of this activity. All right, so moving on to the highlights from this week. Alex, what do we have?
So the first one we have today is some activity from APT-33, the Iranian state-associated threat actor. And they were observed using the ever-so-popular WinRAR vulnerability, which we've seen being used in a variety of campaigns over the past couple of weeks. So it's unsurprising that we're seeing it being used at this scale. So APT-33 was seen targeting engineering, manufacturing, and various financial organizations in Saudi Arabia and the U.S. Since February 2019. So it kind of goes to show how this vulnerability is both being harnessed by low-level threat actors as well as state actors as well.
I mean, we talked about WinRAR on the show, actually. How dare they take over my WinRAR? It's a classic application.
That no one ever pays for the full version, right?
Whoa. Let's not go that far.
They don't make you.
That's true. All right. Well, yeah, interesting. Definitely something to keep an eye on. All right. So, Jamie, what do you have?
Yeah, a new campaign referred to as Solar was identified. This involved phishing emails with links to at least four of South Korea's most prominent websites that were actually compromised through malicious JavaScript code. So, you know, essentially kind of a watering attack via phishing emails, which is, you know, quite uncommon, especially given the popularity of these websites. We still don't know exactly what's going on here in terms of the threat actor behind the campaign or the motivation.
All right. Then on to our third highlight, Alex.
So we have Earl Enterprises Restaurants, and I believe they own the chains like Buca di Beppo and Planet Hollywood. So they were affected by some physical point-of-sale malware on the actual restaurant terminals that are used in the physical locations between 23rd of May and 18th of March 2019. So a pretty long period during which they were affected. And so a separate report had indicated that approximately 2 million customer records were possibly compromised. And they have been detected for sale on some criminal marketplaces. So this kind of goes to show that even though we have this big influx of virtual skimming against e-commerce websites, physical point-of-sale malware is still definitely a big deal.
Yep, for sure. For sure. Interesting. All right. So is there anything that's going on that the listeners should keep an eye out for other than what we've already talked about?
So the 7th of April, that's this Sunday, marks the anniversary of the anti-Israeli hacktivist campaign Op Israel. So just while Harrison's tucking into his Sunday lunch, we're likely to expect, you know, a variety of hacktivist campaigns targeting Israeli organizations. This is typically to kind of protest against Israel, often from a pro-Palestinian posture. Most of this will be pretty unsophisticated. We're thinking kind of denial of service attacks, maybe some website defacement attacks. But we've already seen kind of early indications that this is going to go on. There's a Facebook event of Op Israel that's already posted images claiming to have hacked into CCTV footage of Israeli organizations. There's a Pastebin site posting various Israeli websites that are potential targets, some Twitter chatter as well. So, you know, I think we're already kind of seeing evidence that this is taking place and likely to kind of ramp up as we get closer to Sunday.
Cool. And then Alex?
So we have some upcoming elections in India, and these kinds of things are always attractive points for a variety of threat actors. Things such as misinformation campaigns can be particularly impactful. And I believe we've already seen a few domestic campaigns ongoing, so it's likely that those will increase as time goes on and the elections kind of ramp up.
All right, listeners, that is going to do it for the summary this week. Remember to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms. We're on pretty much everything at this point, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, so you can get our dulcet, comforting tones wherever you may be. All right, so this week's question of the week. It was going to be, what's your favorite Game of Thrones theory? But Alex, I know you don't watch Game of Thrones. And Jamie, I'm assuming that you also don't watch Game of Thrones.
I do watch Game of Thrones. I just try and keep it quiet.
So there you go. I'm the only person in the entire world that doesn't watch Game of Thrones.
Yes. Apparently. You and your girlfriend, you both need to get on that. It's
so intimidating.
Well,
there's so much. I don't know where to start.
Whose fault? That's your fault. You should have caught on 10 years ago. all right. Well, we're going to roll with that question then. What, Jamie, what's your favorite Game of Thrones theory? How is it going
to
end?
Well, I'm not able to answer that because in between each season of Game of Thrones, I managed to forget everything that's happened before. And the first half of each season, I am just the most confused person. But maybe I could kind of offer a controversial opinion. And that is that the kind of the scrutiny, the criticism of King Joffrey is, for my money, completely unfair.
Whoa, that is highly controversial. Why is that?
Well, he's kind of presented as this cruel and oppressive dictator, as a tyrant.
Yeah.
But actually, he's this vulnerable, insecure young child. And the expectation that a child can be kind of thrust into that role with all the pressure surrounding the monarchy and, ruling the Seven Kingdoms and the family dynamics and to be able to just assume they were going to become a good king at that age, I think is completely unreasonable.
Well, okay. To be a good king, sure. I get that part. But he also, tortured and, killed people. So, I feel like there's a balance in there somewhere between being a child and, torturing people. Like, there's some sort of balance in there somewhere.
No, I don't know. Nature versus nurture. family...
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point, nature versus nurture. Okay, so my theory, you want to hear my theory? I think that everybody's going to die at the end, everybody. And, Night King is gonna win, basically. Spoilers, by the way, for Game of Thrones last season. And Night King is going to sit on the throne, and then he's going to accidentally poke himself with, Valyrian steel, because, I think the throne's made out of Valyrian steel, right? So he's going to poke himself, then he's going to die because all the White Walkers are, vulnerable to that. And then that's that. And then everybody's dead.
Or what if the season just ends and then it cuts to a scene of Hodor just peacefully sleeping in front of a fireplace and it was all in his head?
And then he slowly closes a book afterwards and he's like,
yep.
Hodor. I think I'd be somewhat happy with that as well. But I'm just imagining...
It's a peaceful ending.
It is
someone has to die. There you go.
I'm just imagining that there's going to be all kinds of destruction and death happening in the last season. I feel like
it doesn't have to be like that.
That's how George R.R. Martin, intends it. That's how he wants it.
And so it shall be.
And so it shall be. His will be.
What I like about your theory, Harrison, is you could then just transition into the kind of post-apocalyptic movie. So you could kind of, if everyone dies, then you can kind of just say that I Am Legend and films like that are the kind of natural successors to Game of Thrones. Mm. It all takes place within the same universe.
That's very true. What were we talking about the other day, Alex? Like, we were talking about Game of Thrones and some other universe were the same universe. Oh, it was Avengers.
Yeah.
And so at the end of Game of Thrones, what's going to happen is everybody's just going to start dusting. Everybody's going to start turning into dust. And that's going to be, it's like Game of Thrones took place on some random world in that same universe. And everybody just, half the people start dying.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be ultimate crossover territory right there. I'm just saying.
Imagine the value of that IP.
Marvel, you can have that one. You can take that. I'm giving that to you for free. please.
I guess it would be a cool, you know, crossover universe if the Avengers wasn't awful.
Whoa. Ooh,
them's fighting words, Jamie.
That's a hot take right there, especially after the new trailer came out this week. Mind blown. Even though it was only like a minute long.
So, Jamie, you're not going to go see Endgame then?
I don't even know what that reference is. I assume that's an Avengers movie, but no, I won't be seeing it.
You hurt me. You hurt my soul. Star-Lord would be disappointed in you. All right, well, then that will do it for us from this week. Thank you, guests. Thank you, listeners. Marvel, if you're listening, please use that theory in Game of Thrones. And we'll talk to y'all next week.